want to say it's a real joy to be with you this evening. Of course, in my age, it's a joy to be anywhere. But I'm very grateful for the many years the Lord has given me, and that I can be with you and share you some very interesting issues, questions, very important questions. And if we can have the lights dimmed right off and the pictures on, we can get right to some of these very troublesome issues that are appearing in our church at present. We have quite a number of individuals who are saying, well, the data in favor of long ages is rather overwhelming. And I want to address that tonight, because it addresses a very important doctrine of the church, namely the Sabbath. The story is told about a man that trained fleas. We admire people who can train dogs. This one could train fleas. And he could teach them to jump when he told them to jump. And he invited his friend in to see him. To add to the visit, he asked, well, how about you watching my fleas jump? And so he brought in a flea and told it to jump, and it jumped. And this is rather impressive. He said, I've got one flea that's really good. So he brought it in, and he asked it to jump, and it jumped. He says, I've taught these fleas so well that even when they're suffering, they will jump. And so he pulled a leg off the flea and asked it to jump, and it still jumped. And he pulled two legs off and asked it to jump, and it jumped. And he did the same thing with three and four and five and six. Flea has six legs, you know. He finally pulled off the last leg and he asked it to jump, and the flea didn't jump. And he turned to his friend and he said, you know, I've discovered this over the years. When you pull all the legs off a flea, it can no longer hear. Well, you get the issue here. It's a question of interpretation. Looking at the same data, drawing various conclusions. And this is somewhat what we're dealing with here in connection with this issue of time. And just to introduce it here, we have a picture here of a ammonite, huge one, probably 10 times the diameter of a normal chambered nautilus, probably 1,000 times the volume. It's said to be 70 million years old. And this is the traditional interpretation. Is it 70 million years old? Well, you go to all museums, parks, national parks, and everywhere else, they tell you these kind of figures. On the other hand, you read the Bible, and you're told, no, God created in 6 days, and it sounds like it's a few thousand years ago. Next slide. And when you look at pictures, layers like the Grand Canyon, you're told, well, this layer down here is about 570 million years old, and this one around 350 million, this one 240 million. And if that's the case, what we don't often realize is that as soon as you start putting a lot of time into that geological sequence, you no longer can have God creating in 6 days. Why? Because most people don't realize you've got different kinds of fossils in this layer down here, as you have in this layer here, or as you have in that layer there. And if there are 100 million years between some fossils, there's no way that God created all in 6 days. Putting a lot of time into the geologic column challenges the Sabbath. Could we have the next slide, please? Could we have the next slide, please? We're trying to get settled up here. Here's the simply the fourth commandment. Hardly need to mention this to some of the Adventist group, but some of you may not be of that persuasion. It says, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that then is, and rested on the seventh day. He did all in 6 days. It would be a strange God who would create over millions of years, as would be implied by these various layers, if you adopt, say, an idea that God did it, he did it over a long period of time. And then he tells us, no, keep my Sabbath, because I created in 6 days. The challenge is rather simple. It's not just Genesis involved. It's God's integrity. Probably the most direct words we have in the Bible from God are the Ten Commandments written by his own finger. Was he not telling us the truth there? If you adopt an idea of these long geological ages, this is a question that you have to face. Next slide. Here's a book called Mathematical Challenges to the Neo-Darwinian Interpretation of Evolution. published 1967. That book is very important historically, because what it has done is it has raised certain questions regarding evolution. As far as the issue we are discussing tonight, its importance lies in the fact that a number of mathematicians challenge the probability that evolution could occur, and a number of those challenges involve the amount of time that was suggested for this. And when they took into account these billions of years, and they were quite generous, suggesting maybe 5 billion years and so on, the amount of time was totally inadequate for the improbabilities that evolution suggested. And this opened the door for a number of other ideas about evolution. But that book served to also point out, give the evolutionist billions of years, he does not have enough time. Nevertheless, he tries to obtain all the time possible because of improbabilities. So on the one hand, we've got evolution demanding all this time. On the other hand, we've got God, who says he can do it in 6 days, and certainly he is not faced by this time challenge. So I hope the issue is apparent to you here fairly clear. It's fairly simple. We put it simply this way. How long has life been on earth? Has it been on earth just a few thousand years, as suggested in the Bible, or has it been on earth for billions of years, as suggested by evolution? And those figures we are pointing are not adequate to answer some of the questions we face. Next slide. Well, one of the first questions that comes up is carbon-14 dating. I don't want to overburden you with the details of carbon-14 dating. I just want to introduce to you a little bit of the situation as you look at the scientific literature. What happens in carbon-14 is simply that carbon-14 is an unstable element form, and slowly it changes to other elements, disintegrates quite slowly, nitrogen-14 and so on. And the less carbon-14 you have, the older a substance is. That's the basic system involved. How accurate is this? We can't take time to discuss all the details of it, but next slide, look at some of the data. And some of it's very impressive. And these are dates from a series of layers in a cave. And we have dates start a few thousand years here, go down clear to around 7,000 years, but quite a number of impressive dates. And to me, this is the most impressive data of carbon-14, and that is that we can get these fairly long sequences in order like this, and some of them go way beyond the 7,000 of this particular chart. This happens to be a cave in Wyoming. Some go way beyond that, and they do challenge the suggestion in the Bible and so on that maybe life hasn't been here for the for a few thousand years. Some of these series go clear up almost to 40,000 years, but the last part of it is hardly worth considering, but they do go way beyond what we normally consider the biblical time framework, which we don't know exactly what it is. Next slide. Well, you cannot see this slide here, but it's a report from American Antiquities Journal. And it dates 11 different human skeletons. And some of them are dated as old as 70,000 years. Some of them as young as a couple thousand years and so on. And what they have done in this study is to report new dates and compare them with older dates. The older dates are in this column right here. The newer dates are right here. Some of the older dates were based on amino acid racemization. Some of them are based on carbon-14, and a few of them on other dating methods. Interestingly, the older dates, which are in this column, average about 28,000 years for man in North America, for these 11 skeletons that they've studied. Now, when they redid this, and it was redone by the new mass accelerator spectrometry method of carbon-14, they got much younger dates. The average was less than 4,000 years. This does illustrate a little bit to you the different dates that we get in the literature, and certainly dramatic changes in some cases. This first one up here had an amino acid date of about 70,000 years and came down to about 2,000 to 4,000 years when dated by carbon-14. So at times you have room for some skepticism, in spite of the fact that I showed you those very nice sequences, like in the previous slide. Also, many dates do not agree with what would be expected or with previous dates. Next slide. Just an example here of what happens at times. This is a paper of soil levels in New Zealand. And you have dates of 9,000 right here, 12,000, 27,000, and 17,000 and 15,000. Now, so something is radically wrong here when the soil level that is lower down dates younger than one higher up. Next slide shows you same data being reported in a later paper, a year later, by one of the same authors of the previous paper. And what does he report? Well, he reports the 9,000, the 12,000, and the 27,000, and the 15,000 and 17,000 year dates that were too young were left out. Now, let me make a point very clear. This could be interpreted as dishonesty. It is not, at least not in my opinion. These folks are sure that carbon-14 is quite reliable and that there must be some explanation for this. It's done in all honesty. It's done in openness. Both of these articles are published. Remove those dates that don't agree. Why? Because they know they're wrong. Let's take an understanding attitude towards this. They've been trained this way. Let's keep in mind, they've been taught the Bible is just a fairy tale. That's folk literature and so on. It's not true. Don't pay any attention to it. It's ridiculous. Pursuing that, they follow the trend of thinking. This is not deception. It is what you call self-deception. It's what you call sometimes in intellectual circles intellectual phase locking, where your ideas are fitted into that which is accepted. And science proceeds that way very often and for very long periods of time. And it's considered one of the weaknesses of science, but it is not deliberate dishonesty on the part of the scientist. And this whole issue of time falls, in my opinion, into that category, as we'll see as we go on. Next slide. Another method of dating is amino acid racemization. Again, I'm not going to go into the details of it, except to tell you that in our bodies we have proteins. Proteins are made of amino acids. Those amino acids, when created in the laboratory, have two forms, an L form, that is right here, and a D form. Now, if you look at these, you can see one is the mirror image of the other. And the simple example of this is your left and your right hand. This is called the level of the left, because the weight changes the direction of polarized light. But it takes a certain amount of time for these amino acids to change from one type to the other. And living things have the L type, and elements produced or amino acids produced in the laboratory have the L and the D type, about 50% of each, under normal conditions. There are many complications involved in this. But since it takes a certain amount of time to change from L to D, you can use this as a clock. And the more D you have, the older the sample is. And this has been a method that has been used for a number of decades now, trying to determine the dates of certain things. Next slide gives you some results that have been reported from this. Now, this is a slide from the journal Origin, journal which I edited, which compared the rate of disintegration of aspartic acid, that's one of these amino acids, with time. Now, you would think that for a dating method, that you would keep the same rate of disintegration. Well, amino acid dating has been so variable that investigators have not paid that much attention to it. And what was put together here by Dr. Bob Brown, 1985, was reports of dates determined by aspartic acid. And he found that in order to get the older dates, you had to assume the amino acid disintegrated much more slowly from the L to the D type. The changes in rate were astounding. I must tell you, when he first submitted this article to me, and I saw it, and I saw this diagram right here, I said to myself, science cannot be that bad. If you were really using amino acid racemization for dating, you should not change the rate of disintegration. All these dots, and this is the age and years here. You've got a million years here, 10 million years here. And this is the rate of disintegration. The disintegration constant is calculated. I went home, redid the calculations and so on. I thought, there's got to be something wrong here, because this is hundreds of papers here, or reports of dates here. For the older dates, it disintegrates much more slowly. How much more slowly? Well, in this set, 700 times more slowly. It's as though you had a candle, and you experimentally determine. Your candle burns down to completely in 1 hour. And when you find some candles still burning, and they're supposed to have been burning for days, you say, well, they don't burn down as fast. And here you have a picture of this, and the older the sample is assumed, the slower you have to assume the disintegration rate. And down here you'll say, well, they're about 700 times as slow as up here. Is this a reliable dating method? Of course not. Yet at times it's promoted as supporting radiometric dating. In order to get it to fit with radiometric dates, which is largely the basis for these dates down here, you have to say the change goes on much more slowly. Well, next slide. Study was made, same paper, Dr. Brown again, for isoleucine as it changes. And again, you've got the same picture here, many more samples. 2,000 times more slow here than up here. Yet, some say, well, no, this system supports radiometric dating. Really, folks, this is something that doesn't fit at all. And some scientists have recognized this finally. Next slide. A quotation from the journal Science, probably the top science journal of the world. 16th of February, 1990. 15 years ago, enthusiastic users held out the hope that amino acid racemization could be used to determine the age of objects that could not be dated by other means. Today, in striking contrast to those early expectations, many people regard amino acid racemization as some kind of joke, in the harsh judgment of paleoanthropologist Milford Wolfolf. Yet, still we see suggestions amino acid dating does support radiometric dating. We've got an independent method here. You need to go into the literature carefully before you draw conclusions. Next slide. Last method. I don't want to overburden you here with dating methods, because I know this is something not that interesting, but it is certainly something very challenging. A potassium-argon dating method, instead of carbon-14, which is only good for a few thousand years, potassium-argon deals in the billions of years. And it's been the backbone that has established the geological time scale. And what happens there is that potassium-40 changes very slowly to argon-40, and again, it's complex, we're not going to go into the details of it. But the more argon you have present, the older the sample. Next slide. Again, a list you can't see, but I want you to be impressed with the fact that there are lots of dates, radiometric dates, and these are dates as listed as you go down through the geological layers. So be impressed that when people say, hey, there's something to this radiometric dating, you'd expect there would be, and I think there is. Because here you have this list here, which you can't see, I'm sure. Maybe you could focus it up there on your projector, which is listing a number of dates here from younger to older, down here at the bottom. And these dates are almost all in order as they go down into the deeper layers. Next slide. That's just part of the table. Here's more. Next slide.
Here, more of the dates here as you're going down.
They get older. Impressive data. And these series, I would say, represent what I'd say the greatest challenge to a recent creation in terms of scientific. How authentic or how valuable are these dates and so on? Well, let's look at the other side of the picture. Next slide. Picture of the island of Oahu, island of Hawaii in the Hawaiian chain. And this is the edge of the island. And they went down some lava flows, which by various methods they did to have been less than 17,000 years, including carbon-14 dating. And they tested for potassium-argon dating, and they found that argon was trapped, and the further down they went, the more argon was trapped, and the older the dates. For something that's 17,000 years old, they got dates in the millions of years. In fact, way out here down where you're down about 5 kilometers in the ocean, they got some dates of 43 million years by potassium argon. Now, this is very interesting if you think in terms of a biblical flood. Why? Because is it possible that the biblical flood had the same influence? The authors of this paper, which is published in the journal Science, felt that the reason for this was that the pressure of the water prevented the argon from escaping. The deeper the pressure, the less argon escaped, the older the sample dated. We're speaking of a systematic system. They would call it a systematic error that gave you older and older dates. Could something like this have functioned during the flood? Certainly a possibility here in terms of the interpretation of these dates. Next slide. Well, you can't see this too well. It's an island right here in New Zealand, Rangitoto. They've taken samples of wood from the lava flows. It's a volcanic island. They date less than 300 years, right? Carbon-14. They've tested the lava by potassium argon dating. It'll date 485,000 years. Again, too much excess argon. There are a lot of problems with argon dating in connection with excess argon. A lava flow in Hawaii that dates at 1802 historical date, tested by potassium argon dating, dated 1.1 million years. Again, the problem, excess argon that is not released by the lava type of thing. Next slide. Is there selection of data? No question. This is openly admitted. One example here, it says in conventional interpretation of potassium argon age data, it is common to discard ages which are substantially too high or too low compared with the rest of the group or with other available data, such as the geological time scale. Open admit. They're sure that the geological time scale is correct. If it doesn't fit, something's wrong. Next slide. Here's an impressive series of dates. This is as you go down the geologic columns, published recently in a Adventist publication, where you have, as you get down deeper in the geological column, the dates get older and older. How much selection of data is there in there? Well, I don't know for this set. I can tell you for the set that was prepared from data a year later, next slide, that this is what the author stated. He says, a large number of age determinations on rocks of Carboniferous to Triassic, and he prepared a sequence just like the previous slide, have been published. In this review, which was a summation of the ages of the geologic column. The radiometric data available in nearly 500 separate articles have been examined by the senior author. And following application of the above criteria, only 45 dated items have been accepted from this voluminous literature as suitable for timescale purposes. Now, he starts with 500 articles. I haven't read all the 500 at all. You could assume probably at least 10 dates per article, so he probably at least 5,000 dates to start with, right? He selected only 45 for the report. No question there's significant selection here, and it's accepted because they are sure that they are correct and that other views are incorrect. But that is, as I've explained to you, done in integrity, but it is a problem of self-deception. Next slide. Furthermore, the flood is not considered in this, and the flood would have tremendous effects on these dates. Wave here, just describing destruction of landscape as these flood waters would have risen and so on. Think of burying all the vegetation, how this would affect the carbon cycle and the carbon 14 dating, for instance. This is part of the biblical model of origins, and that is an integral part of it that needs to be taken into account as you determine these various dates. Next slide. Just a summary here of how the Genesis flood could affect radiometric dates. First, major changes in carbon reservoirs would change carbon 14 ratio. Now, the interpretation of ancient dating material from the matter of the ancient empty earth that existed before creation week. And this depends on your view, but if there was an earth here before creation week, some of that material could be incorporated due to the activity of the flood into what we consider more recent layers and give you older dates. Third, the effect of hydrostatic pressure on the flood waters on the escape of radiometric decay products. And I just talked to you about that in connection with those dates they obtained in Hawaii. They got older as you went into deeper layers. For the effect of degassing of the Earth's mantle during the flood. And there have been some suggestions that this is involved in producing some of these anomalous dates. Not with the flood, but assumed to have occurred over time. Well, maybe the flood would do the same thing. Lastly, cooling effects of molten rock material associated with the flood. And we can produce some systematic series based on the effect of cooling, because the lava that comes out of a volcano, for instance, is much hotter later on than the first lava to flow out. And this affects the amount of gas that escapes, of argon that escapes, and so on. This affects your dates. So there are many alternatives, but I want you to also know there are many dates that seem to agree with the geologic column, at least that long series I showed you. There were 98 dates in those two slides I showed you in that one series, which is an impressive series. Next slide. Well, let me get to you just briefly. There are certain geological phenomena that are going on that tell us, hey, things haven't been going on that long. By this I mean these things are so fast that we can't fit them into these long dates that have been suggested by radiometric dating. Here's a picture of the island of Oahu in Hawaii. There's a river right here, pours into Pearl Harbor. Just an example of how we can measure erosion. You can take a sample here at the mouth of the river and see how much sediment there is in it. And you can do this day after day, year after year, and pretty soon you can tell how fast the basin of that river is being eroded. And it turns out that many studies like this have been done all over the world. Could we have the next slide? And these studies have shown that erosion is way too fast. Sparks, a geomorphologist at Cambridge, says some of these rates are obviously staggering the Yellow River could peneplain an area with the average height of that of Everest in 10 million years. Well, are our continents billions of years old, as radiometric dating would suggest, if some rivers can erode their basins in just 10 million years? Next slide. Here's a series of 12 studies that I've collected from the literature, and all of them that I know of, where these men have suggested how fast the continents are being eroded away. And the results are given in billions, million metric tons per year. But the figure as well, they might as well be billions if you want to, it's at least. They usually report them in million metric tons, but they talk about an average is around 24,000, the average of all those studies, about 24,000 or 24 billion metric tons per year. That's how much material from the continents being washed in the oceans. How long can you do that and still keep your continents? Well, next slide. Picture here of the Grand Canyon. I wish the picture were just a little brighter for you to see the details here, various things. But you've got your whole geologic column here. It's still here. Why hasn't it been washed away? One of the explanations that is used in standard textbooks of geography and so on is that, we renew these mountains from below and so on. We know they erode fast, but we renew them from below. Well, you can't do that and preserve your geologic column, as you can see it very well in the Grand Canyon. Why is it still there? We haven't gone through even one cycle of erosion and uplift. We're still in the first cycle because these very old rocks are still there, and younger rocks and so on are still there, as we see in the Grand Canyon. So we can say very clearly, erosion rates are way, way too fast to fit with the standard geological timescale presented by radiometric dating. How fast? Well, according to present rates, about 200 times at least. Our continents should have been eroded away at least 200 times, and they're still here. But agriculture speeded this up, and the calculations on this would suggest maybe agriculture has doubled erosion rates. So the figure is probably more like 100 times. But how come the continents are still here if they should have been eroded away at least 100 times? Next slide. One geologist commented on this. He says, North America is being denuded. And this is not a person who believes in creation, folks. North America is being denuded at a rate that could level it in a mere 10 million years. That's the question, right? Why is it still here? According to radiometric dates, it's billions of years. Or to put it in another way, at the same rate, 10 North Americas could have been eroded since the Middle Cretaceous time, 100 million years ago. If we next assume the present rate of erosion and exposed continental volumes to have been constant over, say, the past 1 billion years, then we would expect a staggering 30,000 meter thick layer of sediment to cover the seafloors today. And you only have about 300 meters there. And subduction due to the continental drift model will not work because only about 10% of your sediments are being subducted. If you compare that to what is being produced by the rivers. So it's not a solution. He concludes here, apparently we have erred badly in making our assumptions. And I would tend to agree with that. But of course, they would not go to the assumption that the Bible might be correct. As in present, Bible is not considered acceptable in science. Next slide. Another factor is volcanic activity. Volcanic activity so fast now that, you know, we should have all kind of, everything should be covered with volcanic ash around here if it was going on in the past as it has now. we should have 74 times as much volcanic material on the continents as we have now, if radiometric time scale is correct. This is just a lava flow in Hawaii to illustrate volcanic activity. This goes on all over the world, and we conservatively can suggest that probably 4 cubic kilometers of volcanic material is poured out on the continents every year, and at that rate, we should have 74 times as much volcanic material as is present there now. Next slide. Another factor is the rate of uplift of mountains. What you don't realize is that many of our mountains are going up all the time. Slowly, very slowly. If you start putting that over geologic time, you're in trouble. Just a picture of the Alps here. These mountains are rising at 1 millimeter per year. Next slide. The Andes, probably going up at 3 millimeters per year. The Himalayas, 5 millimeters per year. The Rockies, about 1 to 10 millimeters per year. The Appalachians, about 0 to 10 millimeters per year, and so on. This is a picture of the Southern Alps in New Zealand going up at the rate of 17 millimeters per year. If you take an average of 5 millimeters per year, in 100 million years, you're going to have mountains 500 kilometers high. And you can't resolve that one by saying, well, maybe they eroded away because erosion rates are way too fast. Because they're rising, 60, 80 times as fast as our average erosion rates. So that is not a solution to the problem. Next slide. Last main point I want to make deals with the question of the fact that when we look at those geologic layers, something that you're not aware of is that major portions of the geologic column are missing between some of those layers. Here's a picture taken from Bryce Canyon, and you have a layer right here that is dark gray, and you can see a pink layer above it. What you don't know is that between those two layers is a significant portion of the geologic column that is missing. About 9 million years in terms of the radiometric time scale of the standard geological time scale. And the question that arises is that if this gray layer right here, right below where I'm pointing out, that gray layer below it was there for 9 million years, it should have been washed away long ago. Of course, there should be nothing there. We've already told you. Everything should have been gone at least 100 times. Why is it so flat there if that time is really correct? Next slide illustrates to you just what we'd expect here. Just a slide's out of order here, and I must back up just a second. This is a summary of what we were discussing in the previous point, and we'll get back to the other one here. I'm sorry. It's okay. Get back to this one. Thank you. Rate of erosion of the continents would be eroded to sea 125 times. I was being conservative with 100. Rate of production of volcanic ejecta, 74 times. The rate of uplift of mountains should be 500 kilometers in 100 million years. That's next slide. We're talking about this lack of erosion. This illustrates what we would expect. Water usually layers down in a flat pattern, whether you're in a worldwide flood or at present. This is the way things are laid down. Most sediments are laid down by water in a flat pattern. And here you have your sedimentation with no erosion, because the layers have been laid down rapidly, one on top of the other. Now, let's suppose we have a 9 million year gap, as I was telling you about that gray layer in the two slides back. Erosional, you'd have irregular erosion of that layer there, and I hope some of you can see that you can follow my pointer right there. This is the top of the layer. It's been eroded away irregularly. Now, if there was a lot of time, you'd expect that. If not, you would not expect it. But let's say we have a lot of time. You'd have that irregular erosion. Then you'd start laying layers over it, and they would be flat again as layers are laid down. However, you'd be able to pick up that old irregular surface. And this is very important to this point here. Erosion tends to be very irregular. Well, when we look at the layers, like the layers of the Grand Canyon, this is not the case. Tend to be very flat. How do they tell that something is missing? They go to other parts of the world where certain fossils are there, certain sections of the geologic column are there, and they say, well, it's missing in this part, but it should be here. And major portions of the geologic column are missing in different parts of the world. Next slide. Picture of the Grand Canyon here, just to illustrate to you what we're talking about. For instance, right here, I hope you can see a rather flat layer right here, right at the bottom of this, very flat through there. 100 million years are missing there. You have no Ordovician or Silurian there. Should be a tremendous amount of erosion that time. The whole Grand Canyon is thought to have been cut down in 5 million years, and here you've got 100 million years, and still the contacts are very flat, like you can see right through here, all through this layer. Right through this reddish layer, there's a gap of 14 million years. Right below this whitish layer you see up here, a gap of 6 million years. Why are these so flat if that geological column, that standard time scale that is adhered to by geologists is correct? And this definitely challenges this. This is not an isolated case. Next slide. How common are these things? This diagram illustrates to you how common they are in the Grand Canyon region. Why? Because we have put these layers on a time scale. And this is the standard geological time scale. The black represents where there are no layers. You've got a gap here, you've got another gap here, another gap there, another gap there. I hope some of you can see the present surface of the Earth. Notice how contrast between the present surface of the Earth and the flat erosion. Look right here. We have this layer right here, for instance. You see how flat that is? Supposed to be over 100 million years here. It sat there, no erosion. Yet the present surface of the Earth is like this, or you can follow this line here. There's another curve right here. Or if you have any trouble, you can look in my book, check it out of the library or what. You can have this diagram there that tells you the present surface of the Earth is highly irregular due to erosion. Yet where you have parts of the geologic column missing, you don't have that, as though that time had not occurred. Next slide. I'm going to go through a whole bunch of these to make sure you are aware how common these are. And so I hope our assistant up there who's helping us changing slide will go rapidly on this. But this is Dead Horse Point, Utah. At where this arrow points here, you've got 12 million years missing. Where this arrow points, you got 20 million years missing there. Very flat. Look how irregular the Colorado River has cut this region. Next slide. This is in Switzerland, Rhone Valley, right at this point right here. 45 million years missing, no erosion. Next slide. This is in Australia, south of Sydney, right above this coal layer. Here's a bus for scale. No erosion of that coal. 5 million years. Vegetation that formed that coal had to sit there for 5 million years. This is not possible, folks. And then you layer the layer above it and the coalification process can take place and so on. Next slide. This is in Brazil. 45 million years here, right at this line, this very sharp line that you have here. Next slide. Owl Creek Mountains in Wyoming. Lines right through here. Very flat contact. 78 million years. Next slide. Dr. Norman Newell looked at this, geology looked at this. He says the origin of paragonformes, and that's what they call some of these gaps, is uncertain. I certainly do not have a simple solution to this problem. Next slide. If you have time missing in one part of the world, it's missing over the whole world. You have a picture here of the whole world. And we can effectively eliminate practically the whole geologic column on the basis of the fact that there's no erosion at these particular gaps. Next slide. This is in Arizona, Petrified Forest National Monument. You can hardly see the lines right here. There's a grayish layer up here and a reddish layer below. You can see it over there and so on in this region. Close to 200 million years there. How could this soft layer sit there for 200 million years? Next slide. You do find some erosion. Don't get the idea there is none. You'd expect some erosion during the flood anyway. And here's an example of some right here. There is a channel right here. This darker layer you see right here is a channel. There is some erosion, but the erosion is minor compared to what you'd expect over these long geologic ages, and as we told you, it should all be gone anyway. Next slide. East of Yellowstone National Park, the gypsum layer right here you see that arrow pointing. 10 million years between that layer and the pinkish layer you see below. Next slide. Palo Duro Canyon in Texas, right at this line, that sharp line, you can see the whitish, where the whitish line ends right there. About 190 million years right there. Next slide. Same portion over in the state of New Mexico, right there at the same line, 190 million years. Very flat contact. Next slide. Monument Valley, right near the Adventist Hospital, used to be there. 20 million years right there between this pinkish layer here and the reddish layer above it. Next slide. Monument Valley again. Another poor region. 20 million years right there. And on top, 12 million years. Again, you don't see erosion in either one of those layers. Next slide. This is near St. George, Utah. Again, that same 12 million year gap we were talking about for Monument Valley right there. The top right, the base of that sharp cliff you see at the top there. Next slide. Arthur Bloom, geomorphologist, he comments on this. He says, the geologic record of sedimentary rocks is full of unconformities that represent long periods of emergence and erosion of continent-sized regions. These things are widespread, folks, over the continents. He says, these unconformities, it's a term he is applying to them here, are commonly nearly planar. He's saying they're commonly nearly flat. Why are they flat when the rest of the surface is so well carved by erosion? I'd say because there isn't that much time. Rather compelling argument that the biblical argument of recent creation is correct in contrast to the long geological ages that we would suggest. Next slide. I hope you can see there's an island right here in this picture. It's a very flat portion right there. In fact, this is all an island right here. But that surface that you see right there, the skyline, is supposed to be 160 million years old. The island is Kangaroo Island. It's south of Australia. It is 160 kilometers long, about 40 kilometers wide, and it's very, very flat. Could that surface sit there for 160 million years and not be eroded? According to normal erosion rates, we'd expect at least 5 kilometers of erosion in 160 million years. Yet it's so very flat. It doesn't look like that. Those dates hold up. Next slide. And another factor we can add to these layers, just a little sidelight here on this, is in some of these layers we find incomplete ecosystems, and it's illustrated by this dinosaur here near Vernal, Utah. Now, this is just a model, you understand. But dinosaurs had to have food. This is a vegetarian type of dinosaur and so on. And some scientists have raised this question because they don't find the food for these organisms. Now, you know, when we have this drought in Mongolia, so many of the animals died and so on. Animals have to have food. Is it possible that the reason we don't find these plants, they were washed away during the flood? Next slide points out White, who discusses, he says, although the Morrison Plain, and this is a layer spread over some 400,000 square kilometers in western United States, Dinosaur National Monuments in that layer says, although the Morrison Plain was an area of reasonably rapid accumulation of sediments. Now, he's talking geologically here. He's not talking about the flood at all. Identifiable plant fossils are practically non-existent. What are all these dinosaurs doing in there? And he adds further, an Apatosaurus dinosaur would consume 3.5 tons of green fodder daily. Well, you have to have something for these dinosaurs. Next slide. We look at man, and he doesn't seem to have been here as long as is suggested by radiometric dates. Radiometric dates try to suggest man's been here for about 500,000 years. Some say 1 million, and so on. Depends on how you define man. But the fact remains that when we look at that, we see that man has only been here very recently in terms of archaeological deposits. The pyramids, for instance, Sphinx here, and so on. If man has been here for 500,000 years, why don't we find older pyramids, older sphinxes, or whatever man would be? It's not there. Suggest man hasn't been here as long as radiometric dates suggest. Next slide. Writing. History. Why is our history so recent? Just a few thousand years. This is a Gilgamesh epic of the flood. It doesn't seem that man has been here that long. And again, we see some tension between many of the facts of science and some of the data of radiometric dating. Next slide. Just a summary here of the time questions. What we've talked about here, we've talked about radiometric dates, and I think many radiometric dates appear to agree with the long geological ages, and many do not. And remember radiometric amino acid racemization again challenges those dates as we discuss those radiometric dates, although sometimes they're held to support it. Radiometric dating has significant problems. Next, the Great Flood would have had profound effects on radiometric dating dates. Three, current rates of geologic change on our Earth are too rapid to be reconciled with the standard geological timescale. And remember that we added also the fact it looks like some of those layers down quite rapidly. Those animals could not live for millions of years or when they didn't have food through those geologic layers. The scarcity of erosion, where parts of the geologic column are missing, strongly support the biblical model of a recent creation. That's self-evident. The significant evidence for human activity is very recent. And finally, in concluding, I would say it would be a strange kind of God who would create over millions of years and then ask us to keep the Sabbath because he created all in 6 days. He could give us all kinds of other reasons to keep the Sabbath. He would not have to lie to us. When we put this all together, it looks like the case for the Bible makes more sense than other alternatives. Next slide. Just in concluding, a comment or two. This controversy should not surprise you. Peter pointed out in 2 Peter 3:3-7. Thank you for focusing here. First of all, you must understand that in the last days, scoffers will come, scoffing and following their own desires. They will say, where is coming, excuse me, where is this coming he promised?
ever since our fathers died, everything goes on as it has from the beginning of creation. He's not talking about creation week, as the context will show you here. It says, but they deliberately forget that long ago, by God's word, the heavens existed and the earth was formed out of water and with water. By the same world, the present heavens and the earth are reserved for fire, being kept for the day of judgment and destruction of the ungodly men. What is Peter saying here? He's saying in the last days there'll be scoffers. He's saying they'll be willingly ignorant of two things: creation by God and the water covering and destroying the world by the flood. This is dramatically fulfilled before you and the intellectual community. We have evolution to take the place of creation. We have those long geologic ages to take the place of the flood. 2,000 years ago, Peter predicted exactly this intellectual battle we're dealing with here. To me, this tells me that the Bible is no ordinary book. Peter could have suggested 1,000 other ideas that would have been the subject of scoffing in the last days. No, he picked the very two ideas that challenge the Bible right now: the long geological ages and evolution. Rather dramatic fulfillment of a prophecy before our eyes. Next slide. Ellen White has an interesting comment to make about this. This is from Steps to Christ, page 105. She says, God never asks us to believe without giving sufficient evidence upon which to base our faith. His existence, his character, the truthfulness of his word are all established by testimony that appeals to our reason. And this testimony is abundant. Certainly is when you look at all those paraconformities out there. I've been telling you where you have no erosion. Abundant evidence there that things have been deposited rapidly. Yet God has never removed the possibility of doubt. There's data, you know, that looks one way or the other. Our faith must rest upon evidence, not demonstration. But it doesn't rest on ignorance, folks. Those who wish to doubt will have opportunity, while those who really desire to know the truth will find plenty of evidence on which to rest their faith. We have freedom of choice. You can choose. God is not going to force us one way or the other, and we should be grateful for that. Finally, the last slide, just a comment about these various controversies that go on here. I wanted to share you a concern. Controversies can be at times causes for tension, misunderstanding, and so on. We are all sinners. We all make a lot of mistakes. We have a God who is far superior to us, who loves us with infinite love. Let us keep that in mind as these issues are discussed, that we are just humans. And we must love each other, even though our ideas may not agree with others. We certainly want to encourage people to believe the Bible and it's God's word and so on. But let's do it with kindness and with understanding. And as John tells us here, a new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. All men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Well, let us keep this in mind. There's lots of data. Some of it, like these long radiometric dates I gave you, certainly suggest long ages. On the other hand, there's a lot of data that suggests those are wrong. You have a choice. Let us go forth with faith. I personally, as I look at all this, I must tell you, the Bible makes the most sense to me
in terms of not just what's in the Bible, but in terms of the geology that I look at, in terms of the scientific interpretations, in terms of the history and the sociology involved here. There's a lot of issues that are more attitudes than they are data. And I want to recommend to you the Bible as the Word of God, as a way that also brings a knowledge of a loving God to the world. Let's do all we can to encourage people to believe in that book. Thank you.
This special presentation has been brought to you by American Cassette Ministries. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2000, American Cassette Ministries, all rights reserved. For additional cassettes by this speaker or for a free catalog of other American Cassette Ministry cassettes, please contact us as follows. To order toll-free in the United States and Canada, dial 1-800-233-4450. For international calls, dial 717-652-7000. For fax orders, dial 1-717-652-9050. Our internet email address is info@americancassette.org. Our entire current catalog, plus many other items, are available online from our secure website, www.americancassette.org. We accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover cards. Or you may simply write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box 922, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17108 in the United States of America. Answering the heart cry of the faithful for 25 years, American Cassette Ministries requests your continued prayers and financial support as we strive to provide you with the finest, most powerful spiritual messages available. Our one purpose in ministry, to prepare you and your loved ones to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.